The Force That Sets These in Motion by Ann Pendleton. I'm the one who's supposed to kill Bernardi. I know this one thing, always have. That's the point. As for everything else, I'm drawing a blank, and oddly enough, this inspires in me a sense of deja vu. I've been through it all before. How many times is impossible to gauge. I know who I am. I feel comfortable in this skin, but I can't remember my name. I get a sinking feeling, and a curious thought runs through my head. This is getting old. All these setbacks. Lapses of time, memory, life. The confusion and disorientation are overpowering, and I must go through a ritual I've most likely performed in the past. I close my eyes and say aloud, "This is what I know. I must kill Bernardi. Bernardi has a protector. I am in a prison." Focus. It's a wonder I can stay sane under these conditions. I open my eyes and check myself over. I wear a stained t-shirt, pants with muddy knees and no shoes. The cell I inhabit is actually a small wooden shack, like a child's playhouse, with faded, peeling green wallpaper. The warped floorboards creak beneath my shifting weight. On a knit rug to my left are an empty porcelain plate and a saucepan filled with rusty amber water. On the wall to my right is a window with no glass. It is covered over in chicken wire. There is a crude shackle around my left ankle, a length of chain extending out through the barred door and spiked to the ground roughly 5 feet away. I pry at the shackle with my soiled fingers. Strong. I test the chain's links. No give. But when I go over to the door, I notice that the wire holding it to its frame twists and breaks easily. Suddenly, a memory. Someone will be coming soon. Coming.
Or returning. The jailer. An executioner.
The slightest push and the barred door falls into the grass outside. It's more an idea of a jail cell, and sometimes that's enough. This time it's not. I step over the door, toward the spike fixing my shackle to the ground. I begin to dig around it, pull at it, work it side to side, but it won't budge. It's buried deep. I sit in the cool grass, calm myself, survey. Rolling green hills, husks of dead trees close by. In the distance, a copse of live trees flanking a creek. Hoof imprints texture the soft earth, and petrified puddles of manure spot the field like organic landmines. Signs of cattle, but not an animal to be seen. Beside the shack sits a scarred rocking chair. The sun is a deep orange, almost ember red, sinking to the horizon. Evening cool wafts over me. A figure is approaching.
Returning.
I'm not frightened, but expectant. There's a fundamental reason for this, but it eludes me. This person,
jailer, executioner,
must know what I have to do. There is no other reason for me to be imprisoned. I wait. The figure is now discernible in the near distance. A large old woman in a cornflower blue dress. A crocheted shawl sags from her shoulders, and she hobbles slowly toward me on an aluminum cane. I can now make out the details of her face. She smiles at me with a grin that reveals her partial bridge. The smile is warm. No malice emanates from her.
Am I being rescued?
How the world has changed, boy. She laughs through the grunts, marking her progress. She finally settles herself into the rocking chair. I notice for the first time that she carries a canteen. She rests it in her lap with her cane. She glances over at me. Nice to see you up and kicking. This is a poor excuse for a jail, I say. I'd have to agree. How do you expect to keep people in, old woman? Can't answer that, boy. Not my jail. I thought it was yours. Mine. Yep, you left yourself an easy way out. That'd be the kind of jail I built for myself. She pulls the shawl over the flab of her upper arms, begins to rock gently. But I'm still chained here, I say. Don't have to be. It's your choice. I stare at the old woman. She looks away from me, toward the setting sun, chin held high as if watching the world down the bridge of her plump nose. You're not real, I say. As real as I gotta be, she retorts with a phlegmatic chuckle. Her deeply tanned face wrinkles in complex ways, matches the ancient wood of her rocking chair. How, I begin, but I have no thought to finish. The world, how it is changing, she says to the horizon. Stop messing with me. I want off now. She turns to look at me. You thirsty, boy? We're playing a game.
Aren't we?
And I don't know the rules. I follow her lead. Yes, I'm thirsty. Not sure how long it's been since I've had a drink. The old woman unscrews the canteen's cap and drinks from it. Smacks her lips. Wipes the dribbles from her chin. I wait for an offer that isn't forthcoming. I trudge back into the shack, dragging my lead behind me. I take the pan of rusty water, come back outside. I tip it to my lips. The water is acidic and leaves a taste of metal in my mouth. My throat clenches and I double over in the grass, trying with all that I am not to vomit. I hear the old woman laughing. I look at her through burning, watery eyes. I see her motioning for me to approach. She dips her hand into the pan, and for a moment the water is clear. She brings a palm full to her mouth and sips it. She sighs through another wide grin. That's pure heaven. I look in the pan. The water is rusty again. There's something about you, boy, she says. Water saves, but it saves you in a different way. Only the man who builds his own jail can hold the key. I crawl back from the rocking chair and sit on the grass with my pan of rancid water. Think about it for a while, she says. There's silence, but my mind is overloading. The boundaries are separating, and I no longer care if this is real or a dream. They mean the same thing to me. I venture a question. What's your story? She looks at me with a knitted brow. You don't know, boy? No memories. I have no memories, woman. Vague impressions, mostly. I had to have been born, stands to reason. Had a life. Maybe a few. What possesses me to express this final detail? She leans on the rocker's arm toward me. Feels like you're meeting yourself for the first time? More like running into a friend you haven't seen for years, and they're recapping the highlights of their experience, but you can't seem to match images with what's spoken. It's too abstract, like a code, like another's inside joke. So you're friends with yourself then? No. I have a task. Boy, we all have tasks. That's no big thing. Just some people never find out what they're for. Before they die? That's old thinking, boy. Everything's changed. You keep saying that. It's true. More silence. The early evening sky is lit with a quiet fire. A film clicks in my head. A memory fills it. I gasp at the pain as colors explode, voices chitter and warble in staccato rhythms, and emotions lap in waves against the walls of my physicality. For a brief moment, I'm human, and with it comes the remembrances and sensations of that state of perpetual pain, and I think,
amazing that we creatures can exist in this agony of awareness for so long we seldom notice it for what it is. Ice and fire. The mind's needling. The sting of contact, the raking of microscopic particles over the tongue, throat, and lungs, the jolt and madness of firing neurons, automatic and spontaneous expenditures of raw energy. Slaves to a bloody sponge that will not sleep until the final sleep.
The moment subsides. I force speech. I remember a child, a little boy. He's by a stream, looking at me with green eyes, and there's wonder in those eyes. I feel a woman, an impression, but it's just the boy in me by the stream. He grabs my hand. I feel close to him. Tears run down my face. "That your memory?" the old man asks. "What?" "It'll be false. You gotta watch for that." False, or another life. I think I've had many lives. Well, if it ain't the original everyman. When you can't trust your own mind, who do you believe? The task at hand? Who's giving the orders? God? Forget God, boy. He let the dog off its leash. That's old thinking. The world has changed, right? You got it now. I consider my distorted reflection in the saucepan's amber fluid. Memory afterglow sparks a base instinct. I'm inspired. I pour the water on my shackle. Smoke, acidic hiss. The metal dissolves into rolling beads of mercury. I'm free. The old woman nods and smiles. I stand and walk away toward the lush trees. The trees by the creek. The Force That Sets These in Motion, Part 1, was written and produced for Museoncast by Ann Pendleton.